stories of great Christians. From the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute, we bring you Chapter 16 of Saint, the story of Nate Saint, missionary pilot. Operation Alka, the plan to reach a people whose only contact with civilization had been in their slaying of all intruders, was implemented October 1st, 1955, the night four missionaries gathered over a map at Nate's home. Nate, Ed McCulley, Jim Elliott, and Johnny Keenan discussed their plans until early the next morning.
All right, then it's decided. We'll make our aerial visits regularly, say once a week, leaving them something different each week in order to work on their curiosity.
If we keep that up, sooner or later that hostile spirit will have to melt.
But how can we expect them to watch that bucket being lowered to them from the sky and then just come right out and untie it from the cable? They hide every time they hear the plane.
Well, I was thinking maybe we could just leave them the gift somehow so they could see where we put it down and then come and get it after we left.
Can you do that?
Well, I've never had to release the bucket before, but I should be able to rig some kind of simple, dependable release mechanism.
The important thing is we can't rush into this thing too fast. We don't want to scare them. Like you said, Nate, if we can make our visits regularly until we gain their confidence.
Yeah. Now, what about the first time we actually go in on foot? Are you guys thinking of taking Rachel then?
She's your sister. If she were mine, I wouldn't let her take the risk.
Well, we have to have someone who knows the language a little.
Maybe you can get Rachel to teach you a little of the dialect.
Then she'd know about it. No, this has to be kept from everyone.
Well, then what about that runaway Alka who taught Rachel the language? One of us could learn a little of the dialect from her without her realizing what we're up to. Of course, she doesn't know any English. Just Alka and Quechua.
Well, that lets me out.
The hacienda where Dayuma stays is only 4 hours' walk from where I am in Chandia. I'd be glad to do it.
Well, you're elected, Jim. You know the Quechua dialect better than I do.
I've seen Dayuma before. I guess I can see her without raising any suspicions.
Well, then, there's only one question left. When's our first drop?
On the morning of October 6, Nate lifted off the Arahuna Strip and headed out for the Alka site he had discovered a few weeks before. Ed, squatted by the open cabin door, was ready to reel out 2,000 feet of cord, with an aluminum kettle at the end, full of brightly colored buttons and other small items.
Hey, Nate! One question. What do people without clothes do with buttons?
Buttons make great ornaments. They'll find a use for them.
Maybe they'll make themselves clothes from the ribbon streamers.
Okay, look, there are the clearings. Now, you might as well start unreeling while I circle. Now, lift it clear of the plane before you let it unwind. Yeah, that's right. There's the house we want. See it? Looks just like a giant Hebrew thatch house with those rounded ends, doesn't it? Here are the binoculars. You see anybody?
No Indians, but there are paths linking the smaller houses to the central house, and they don't look grown over at all. That main house has a nice sandbar all along the front of it by the river. Looks like there's a wide path right up to the stream.
That must be where they come for water. Let's make that our target. How's the kettle doing?
The ribbons are fluttering real nice.
I hope somebody's watching to appreciate it.
You got it over the right spot now. It's almost stopped circling. It's just making little circles now.
Okay. I'm getting lower every time around. It's hard to hold my position with this wind.
The bundle of cord is getting to the end of the reel.
Well, slow it down so it doesn't snap at the end.
Careful! The kettle just hit a tree. Take her up a little. Okay. Now you're over the water. Just a little closer to the house. Perfect! Let her down. It's hit. It's right on the path to the river.
Did it release from the cable?
I think so. Try lifting up a little. Yeah, it's still there. Right where they can't miss it.
Although they hadn't seen a soul, the men considered the trip a success. They didn't really expect to see an Alka for weeks or even months. But on their second visit, a week later, Nate records the unexpected events.
We landed at Arahuna and began to prepare for the drop, which was to be a new machete. We understand that these people have killed for machetes. That is,
They've killed people working in the fields in order to steal their machetes or axes. We wrapped the blade in canvas so that no one would get cut, and then tied on a number of colored ribbon streamers. After rigging the automatic touch release gadget, we had a word of prayer for the success of the trip and took off. It's always a bit of a strain on me to reel out the line in the air, but I slowed the plane down and we carefully lowered our second messenger of goodwill over the side. By the time the line was all out, we were almost at our destination.
Can you see if our last gift has been taken from the sandbar? Here, use the binoculars.
There are too many low clouds. Wait till we're on the other side. There's the path. Yep, it's gone. No doubt about it.
Well, either they've accepted it or a flood has taken it away. We'll drop the machete at the next house upstream. There, that one.
Look, there are four canoes pulled up on the bank. I thought aquas weren't supposed to have canoes.
Apparently they don't live their lives according to the way we think they're supposed to. Looks like in order to circle this house, we're going to have to be inside the cloud about 10% of the time.
Hey, look!
What?
He's right out in the open.
Hey, what do you know? Our first alca.
There's two more. They're running around right under the machete.
I'm letting it down.
It's going to hit the house. No, it just splashed into the water. And one of the alcas just splashed in after it. I think he's got it. There's a whole crowd out there now.
Well, so much for hiding. They must be as excited about this thing as we are.
On the next trips, the alcas became increasingly bold, although they hid once more when Nate flew within a few hundred feet for a closer look. The release mechanism soon became obsolete, for the alcas began to come running out to take the gift themselves, as Nate put it, converging like women at a bargain counter. On the sixth visit, Ed noticed the Indians taking a little longer at the line, and he reeled in a return gift, a feathered headdress. From that time on, every gift that went down earned a gift in return. The alcas cleared some trees so the plane could get in closer, and one man, wearing a T-shirt dropped earlier, seemed to be directing traffic from the top of a newly constructed tower. Thus encouraged, Nate began looking along the Kurari River for a place he might put down his plane sometime in the future. As he and Ed headed out one day with another aluminum kettle full of presents, they noticed a straight area along the river that appeared to be long enough to serve as a landing strip. They bombed it with sacks of paint pigment powder, to be sure.
Okay, we're going 65 miles an hour now. Tell me when we're getting close to the edge of the beach.
We're already close.
You ready with the first bag?
Yep.
Okay, I'm keeping my eye on my watch. Remember, drop the second bag right on number 7.
Well, here goes. Ready? Now.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. Now. Where did it hit?
Looks like about 30 yards before the end of the beach.
Okay, I'm going to circle around. 230 yards is plenty enough room to set this thing down.
Nate's record tells of the rest of this trip.
It began to look as if this would be our Palm Beach. We decided to shoot a simulated landing on it. Down close to it, I could see the surface well, and I put the wheels down lightly twice as we accelerated again for the pull-up. The surface was smooth as a gravel runway and seemed hard. It's really ideal, except for vulnerability to flooding.
Flying onto the settlement, or terminal city as they called it over the radio, so other listeners wouldn't be informed of the goings-on, Ed hooked up their loudspeaker system, which they used to call out Alka phrases.
We made a couple of low passes calling to them, "I like you." Then we headed home at 65 miles an hour with the prize dangling at the end of the line. At Arahuno, we set it down at the edge of the strip, cut the line, and landed. It had been an unusually strenuous workout, and Ed had had to attend to a sick baby across the river from his place earlier in the morning. He hadn't been feeling too sharp. On the ground, I bashed my way through the brush at the edge of the strip while Ed lost his breakfast. Now, this is the first time I've beat him to the prize. His legs are at least a foot longer than mine. When I got to the bark cloth bag, it was moving.
Since we'd given them a chicken last week, I figured it would be a bird, but as I started to peek in a hole, the thought of a snake crossed my mind. However, it was a nice parrot in a basket covered with bark. It was well tied and was complete with a partially nibbled banana inside for the trip.
On December 23rd, 1955, the four couples that had become involved in the Alka venture gathered together to finalize their plans. This was business that included the wives as well, and they were especially interested in making the whole project as safe as possible.
I tell you, the real danger is that they might invite us to dinner during our first friendly contact and make us eat some of that smoked monkey tail.
Oh, boy. It wasn't so bad.
Well, how did you get it down?
Well, they were kind enough to send us some of their delicacies as a return gift. It was the least I could do.
Well, not meaning any ill to the kind folks who mailed those goodies to us, I was plenty content to sample a few of their peanuts and then sit down to the meal Mary Lou prepared.
Me too.
Mary Lou, the meal was fantastic, even if it didn't include any monkey meat or stewed manioc.
Well, have we come to discuss my food or Operation Alka? Now, before we go any further, I'd like to know just how many men you plan to have on hand when you meet your first Alka on the ground.
The important thing isn't how many men we come in with our first time. It's how friendly our relations with them have become by that time.
Mm-hmm. I think the number of men involved at your initial contact is important. You'll never really be sure how friendly they are from the air.
Well, they've never shown a spear.
Well, they've been deceitful before.
Well, to answer your question, Mary Lou, Ed, Jim, and myself are the only ones in on this for sure so far. But we won't go ahead until we find at least one more man. I wouldn't want to leave just two men alone in Alka country while I fly back and forth for provisions. Of course, when it comes right down to it, we wouldn't be doing this at all if we weren't willing to give our lives, if it comes to that.
Well, if I decide to join you, that'll make four.
Well, we really don't want you to feel pressured in any way, Pete. I certainly don't want anybody to come along unless he's sure the Lord is leading him into this.
I know that.
I'd like you guys to also consider Roger Udarian. I know you haven't had the chance to get to know him, but believe me, he's a real soldier for Christ. A guy who's capable of putting out energy. He was a paratrooper in the war. He came to know the Lord in England. I worked with him while he was opening up the Achuara territory. You've probably heard about how fast he built those two outstation airstrips.
If Roger's got your okay, he's got mine.
Mine too.
Good. I already asked him, and he said yes. As a matter of fact, we've drawn up a plan of operation, subject to your approval.
That's what I call jumping right in.
Now, Jim, you might be the best one to prefabricate a house we can put up in a tree. A couple of sheets of aluminum for a roof and planking for the floor. Nothing fancy.
Sure, I'll do that.
Ed, we need somebody to collect some things to trade with the Alkas when we're down.
You've got them.
Now, Raj will make up a first aid kit. He's got easy access to the extra supplies where he is. And of course, I'll take care of communication and transportation. And, Jim, how about if you also take charge of arms and ammunition?
Then you will have guns.
We've decided they'll be concealed. But if the situation gets tense, we'll let them know we have them. If it gets tenser, we'd fire into the air before we'd hurt anybody.
Well, of course, there's no rush on all this.
But there is, Pete. It's already gotten around to the Quechuas that we've made contact with the Alkas. We know at least two Indians already know one of the locations. I'd hate to see their first contact come before ours with all the vengeance they have in mind.
Yeah. I don't want to rush into this any faster than anyone else, but Jim's right about that. Plus, there's the weather to consider. By mid-January, our landing site will be flooded. The rainy season's just about to start. We have a full moon coming in the first week of January, which could make those nights up in the treehouse a whole lot safer. Now, January 3rd is the date I think we should shoot for. Tuesday, January 3rd.
And so we conclude Chapter 16 of Saint, the story of Nate Saint, missionary pilot. This is another in the series, Stories of Great Christians, produced by the Department of Broadcasting of the Moody Bible Institute in Chicago.